Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. And today we're going to be speaking with Jeffrey Martin about what testers need to know about Microsoft's new operating system, Windows 10. But before we do, let's hear it from our awesome sponsor, Sauce Labs. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Sauce's cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up at saucelabs.com with promo code TESTTALKS14 and get 20 hours of automated testing for free. Now, if you're like me, you've probably been seeing a lot of things about Windows 10 in the media and in the news. Especially, they have this new device which looks awesome called the HoloLens, which projects holographs. It's basically a virtual reality headset, which projects holographs, and you can interact with holographs and has a whole bunch of really neat functionality built in that it looks like it's really going to change things if it's everything that it appears to be. It seems like ever since Satya Nadella became the CEO of Microsoft that the focus of Microsoft has really changed. I think previously Steve Ballmer described Microsoft as a devices and services company, but I think Nadella has really gotten rid of that concept and really is trying to position Microsoft instead as a company capable of working across any platform, even those controlled by competitors, to help people be more productive. And I think Windows 10 is one of those first steps in that vision that Satya has. It has a lot of built-in functionality that's new, that I think is really innovative. It contains a lot of APIs that's going to allow developers to create all kinds of apps to do a bunch of different things. I know that they have their Siri-like Cortana built in. So that API is actually baked into Windows 10. So there's going to be voice commands, APIs that you can tap into. So there's a whole bunch of things. So I got an email from Jeffrey Martin recently from Smart Bear saying that, you know, they've been researching Windows 10 because they're a test tool vendor. They really need to be up on these things. So this episode is not about Smart Bear. We don't talk anything about Smart Bear. It's all about Windows 10. It's just Jeffrey is able to bring his insight from a test tool vendor's perspective. And he's actually thought about certain things about how are we going to test Windows 10. So in this episode, we try to cover all the new functionality that we think is going to impact the way we develop and test software. So let's get into it. Check it out. Hey, Jeffrey. Welcome back to Test Talks.
Hi, Joe. Always great to talk to you.
Awesome. So today, I just want to talk a little bit more about Windows 10 for testers. I noticed that you did a webinar a few weeks ago, and I just wanted to go over some of those points that you went over in the webinar, because I think this is going to be a topic that more and more testers are going to be talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge deal. Windows 10 coming out is, obviously it's a giant deal for developers, but I think it's actually going to be a bigger deal for testers.
Now, before we jump into it, what is Windows 10 at a high level?
So very high level, it's, you know, the next version. For some reason, they skipped 9 of Windows. But the biggest change from previous versions of Windows is that it is going to be truly multiple device. So cross device platform, desktop, tablet, mobile, even Xbox, which is kind of a strange thing to say, right? The same operating system is going to work on your desktop, your phone, your tablet, and your Xbox. That's odd.
That's pretty awesome. It's going to be it sounds like a huge change and almost like a paradigm change from what they've been doing previously.
You know, they always kind of claimed, you know, we're going to go cross-platform.
Yep.
And they just never did.
Right.
You know, we still had Windows RT and that's changing. That's it. They've realized that the future is not in desktop. It's not even in just phones. It's in writing things for one operating system that can be used on all kinds of devices.
And I definitely want to dive into that, but the first thing I want to go over, which I think is the biggest news to me, is that Microsoft's new browser, Spartan. So can you tell us a little bit more about the new browser that Microsoft 10 is going to include?
Yeah, so Spartan is kind of a big deviation again from the way Microsoft's always done business. I think they, you know, sort of anecdotally looked at Chrome and said, how can we make a lighter, more modern browser to really render the modern web? So they launched a brand new browser, completely new rendering engine, so no more Trident. They called it Edge. And the beautiful thing about it is it's much, much more lightweight. It's going to have better extensibility. So plugins will be a lot easier to write for it. And at the end of the day, it's just going to basically try to get out of the way. You know, they've gotten rid of a lot of the old tech. So for instance, it doesn't render, you know, VBScript anymore. Document modes, which were ways of handling compatibility. You know, I think I heard somebody over at Microsoft say the other day, Internet Explorer was being built to support things that were originally written on Internet Explorer 5. So by the time they got to 11, they had a lot of extra junk, frankly, that they have now thrown out and redid an entire new browser. So it's not often you hear about a browser being launched, but here it is.
Now, it's awesome, but it's also not awesome in the sense that I work for a big company, and for some reason, they're one of the companies that build specific to the browser almost. So like ActiveX, and they're tied to IE8 or IE9. They're actually tied to a different version of the browser. So how are testers going to handle this situation? Do you know if Windows 10 is going to be backwards compatible with the older browsers?
Absolutely. So Microsoft did not abandon Internet Explorer yet. And they put a lot of thought into handling how enterprise customers were going to handle this. So beautifully, the new browser, Spartan, can actually switch back to the old rendering engine, good old Trident, and essentially become Internet Explorer 11 when it needs to. That's great, but they've kind of put everybody on notice too. If you were writing things that were specific to an Internet Explorer version, that is a bad way to develop now. You're going to have to go into the future going forward. Spartan is where the new features are going to be.
Awesome. And like I said, this is good news and bad news. So I'm excited about this because I work for a company and some of the teams they do, they even have a newer version of an application that they wrote. And for some reason, they tied it to an ActiveX control. And so I don't think those are going to run in, would really run that well in Spartan. I doubt Spartan's going to support ActiveX. I don't think IE11 does or IE12. So,
right. And I mean, plus all the security concerns that are really coming to the fore in the past year or two. You know, I do think Microsoft's really saying out loud with both Windows 10, Project Spartan, and a few of the other things they're doing, hey guys, it's a new century. You can't keep programming like it was 1990s. you know, you and I were probably a little young then, but you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And what's exciting about it is, if Spartan is really going to be what they say it's going to be, I haven't seen it yet. I don't even know if there's a pre-release of it, is that it'll be just like Chrome and Firefox. And from my experience, running tests against Firefox and Chrome have been faster than IE and less issues. So I'm hoping, you know, once Spartan comes out, the three different browsers will run pretty much the same, hopefully.
I mean, that's their goal, right? And, you know, there's only a few people who've got previews of Spartan here. But one thing I will say, it's actually not going to be three browsers anymore. Unfortunately, because of that backwards compatibility, it's actually going to be five browsers that will really need to be supported, because you've got Spartan, you've got Chrome, you've got Firefox. You also have Internet Explorer. They said out loud it's shipping with Windows 10, you know, as is, just for those few enterprise customers that need it. And you've got Project Spartan automatically switching to the old rendering engine, which to me means you really got to test Spartan twice, the new rendering engine and that compatibility mode.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that answer, but I think I agree with you now that you say that.
It's silly. It sounds horrible, right? Oh, no, now I got five browsers to test because they added one more. But the bright side is that going forward, things that are getting developed, Microsoft's really dragging their developers into the modern century here, and they will stop having to worry about Internet Explorer eventually.
Right, right.
But that transition is going to be a little painful for testers.
here's a side question, I guess. So if there's going to be five different flavors almost of browsers we're going to have to test, in your experience, what do most organizations and people do with their test suite? Do they run their test suite, their full test suite against all the browsers, or do they usually select just a core set of tests that they run against all the different flavors?
At minimum, you want to have your full regression suite running across all the browsers because your users use all of the browsers. It's a good idea to execute any test you can possibly do in a cross-browser framework to execute a cross-browser. You know, if you can, why not? But at minimum, you want to at least have your full regression suite running. And for the most part now, with all the modern tools, you can pretty much go to different browsers pretty quickly.
You know, you also mentioned something about VBScript not being supported in this new release.
Yeah, I kind of threw that one in there. you know, it's funny, right? Because that's, you know, been kind of not updated for a while. But rendering of VBScript in websites is actually not going to be supported in the what they call the Edge rendering engine, the new Project Spartan's core. I think what it really signals is VBScript is abandoned. It's dying. It's dead. Certainly for web programming, but it's just not going to be something Microsoft focuses on, and it's pretty much obsolete.
Which is, I think, is a good thing, because but I guess a bad thing is sometimes we have test tools and we can create scripts in different languages, one of them being VBScript. Do you know if that will affect our actual test scripts?
No, because that has to do with more of the testing software. So, you know, it's really a question of what your application's built in versus what your application does, right? Same idea. Tests, they can be written in anything. All they're going to be doing is executing steps. It doesn't really matter if you're using VBScript to drive that or using Python. The thing that does matter is, why are you spending time learning VBScript right. If nothing else supports it except your testing tool, right? you know, go learn a different language.
I definitely agree. And what I was excited about with the newer version of IE 11 and 12 is that I heard that Microsoft was working on a Selenium WebDriver-specific implementation for Microsoft. So do you know if Spartan also is going to support Selenium WebDriver?
So, you know, being in automation, I spent a lot of time researching that. And it would be a little strange if Microsoft just committed to supporting WebDriver in IE and then said, hey, our next browser, we're not doing it. That would be odd, right? So they have come out. You know, I was able to find a gentleman over there called John Jansen, who publicly said that they were committed to WebDriver and Spartan, but they were working out the details a little bit still, which is understandable. I mean, it's in beta.
Well, that's good to know. I definitely agree. It's going to be a standard, and most vendors like to stay with the standards. I know Microsoft is one of the biggest offenders of this, but it looks like they're changing their ways. So that would be awesome if they do still plan on supporting WebDriver.
You know, I think kind of over there in Redmond, they really have sort of embraced the future a little bit versus looking backwards. And one of those things is, hey, there are standards and Microsoft doesn't control all of them. You know, another standard, they're supporting ECMA 6, right? Which I say out the full way. I keep hearing people correct me and say ECMA, but I'm going to say ECMA so people can understand with my accent. you know, they're saying Spartan's going to have the best support for ECMA 6. Out of any browser when it launches.
Awesome. Now, for those that don't know, what is EMCA?
It's the foundation for JScript and JavaScript.
Okay.
So, you know, JavaScript and JScript are pretty much close cousins, but they're essentially flavors of ECMA, which has been, you know, it's gone through five major iterations and is in the middle of going through a sixth one. So when they update JScript and JavaScript, what they're really doing is re-implementing the latest ECMA standard.
Besides Spartan, which I think is one of the biggest changes, what is, I keep hearing about universal window apps. What do universal window apps mean for testing?
Such a marketing phrase,
know,
isn't
really?
It? yeah. It's what Microsoft is calling their idea of basically write it once, deploy it across every platform. Think the Windows Store, right? Right now, there's separate Windows Stores if you want to write for Windows Phone versus the Xbox versus Windows Desktop. They are consolidating everything. So their intent here is that Windows 10 forms one platform with a small device-specific layer on top, which means I can write my application once and with only a few very small tweaks, get it to deploy on all those different platforms. So short answer is, it makes it a lot easier to test across platforms for testers, because at the end of the day, the application is going to be 99.9% the exact same, with just some small differences, you know, screen size, that kind of thing.
So would you recommend that they would test a majority of the tests on one platform and then just do a few, once again, smoke tests against the other platforms?
Generally speaking, but that kind of brings up an interesting point. You know, maybe I'm jumping ahead of where we were going here, but Windows 10 is embracing the idea that one device isn't stuck being used in one way. So, you know, we saw that a little bit with the Surface, right? You know, you detach the keyboard and it's more like a tablet. You put the keyboard back on and you're typing away on your keyboard like a desktop. They're taking it to another level with Windows 10. So it's not enough anymore to just say, run your regression suite on one platform and then run it on the next platform. You have to actually handle switching between usage modes. Hmm. So if I undock my desktop application, I need it to switch to on-screen keyboard input seamlessly, which means I can't just test desktop mode and then run that regression suite on my tablet mode. I'm going to need to handle switching between the two as part of my testing. Because where do things fail? When things change.
So I'm just trying to picture how I would script this if I had to automate a scenario like that. How would you do that? Are there APIs that would mimic a swipe for you or a hand gesture?
So yes, that's actually the nice thing. Especially with Windows 10, what they call continuum mode, which is basically just a set of APIs. It's a little layer that lets you switch between different inputs and also adjust things like your screen, right? So if I'm in desktop mode, I can make an assumption I'm probably looking at something like a landscape. In a tablet, I might have to read the screen orientation a lot. The way they've built universal Windows apps to work with the devices, it is essentially just another API. It's important to test against it, but it's not going to be a gigantic change. It's just a different use case that you have to consider.
I've been speaking about APIs for a while, so I think Windows 10 is actually going to include a lot more. It's going to rely a lot more on APIs.
I mean, essentially, it's one gigantic API at the end of the day. That's really what they did. And, you know, yes, so you don't interact with it the same way maybe you interact with a web service, but certainly it's just another big API. And that's how they managed to get all these cross-device things. Really, it's just, I have a program that sits on top of this core API. I can depend on that being stable. And then it's just a question of usage. The complication for testers is that usage has more consuming models, right? So if I have one application and I have it on a desktop and I switch to tablet mode, I don't want any interference in my application. And it kind of brings some of those bits and pieces that really haunt mobile testers. Gestures, you know, screen orientation, the ever-popular just good old diversification of devices, right, fragmentation. I think by the end of the year, you're going to see a lot of computers coming out for back to school that are both a desktop and a tablet.
Have you had a chance to interact with any of these APIs to see how hard or how easy it's going to be?
So I have. I grabbed the Windows 10 preview. It's out there. There's about 2 million people who have it now. Look, it's actually not that bad. They seem to really put a lot of thought into making this very, very friendly to Woo developers. So developing on these applications isn't that bad. And the APIs are pretty stable. Obviously, the ones we have access to. We haven't seen Spartan yet. We haven't seen much of DirectX 12. But for the most part, this whole idea of universal Windows apps doesn't appear to be a bunch of smokescreen marketing speak like it was with Windows 8 or, God forbid, Vista. It does seem to be a real solid change. And that means, unfortunately, I think developers and testers are going to have to change with Microsoft a little bit. So I fully anticipate the testing community to have a whole lot of heartache on this coming at the end of the year, which is why we're talking about it now, right?
Absolutely. Just a little off topic. Have you seen the new HoloLens, the holographics that they have in Windows 10?
So, you know, this is a little bit personal here, but I am a huge geek about any virtual reality or augmented reality things. I love the idea of the HoloLens. I wish I had my hands on one. You know, same idea, the Oculus Rift, which I've gotten to play with a few times. Yep. Love the idea. Geez, I think we're still 3, 4, 5 years away from it being kind of everywhere.
Right.
Google Glass didn't do so well.
Right.
But, and talk about testing problems, right? Geez, testing that requires eyeballs. But, but it's exciting. It's awesome. I think eventually we'll get there. I don't think it's quite in flying car territory, but it's not going to be commonplace yet.
Right. It looks pretty awesome. But I was listening to the A-B testing podcast with some guys that actually work at Microsoft.
Yep.
And they were saying that they talked to the manager or someone that's actually on that team to say how real is this to the video that we're seeing, like how many features are actually in it. And they said it's pretty spot on. So I don't know if anyone's seen that demo, but it's pretty impressive what you can do with it.
It is incredibly impressive. One thing, you know, I always think about how this affects testers. You know, I was talking to some of the people over at Oculus, a gaming conference a little while ago. And one of the things they had problems with was testing for nausea. Anything that starts making things move in your eyes. Talk about an unusual testing problem, right? Actual dizziness and feeling ill. So I think when we actually get to good old augmented reality becoming a reality, it's going to present some very interesting testing problems that might be a great specialization for someone.
Yeah, I'm already picturing like sensors that someone would have to wear a sensor band to test for a certain bio signals to see if you're getting nauseous or not. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, and actually, you know, speaking of bio signals, it came out, I think, 10 minutes before I went to go talk to you. It looks like Windows 10 is going to be trying to get rid of passwords as much as they can and actually trying to do a lot more on biometrics, which has been kind of a bugaboo for at least a decade.
Right.
But, I mean, the technology is so cheap now. Looks like they're going to really, really push that.
So that's kind of cool. Basically, what it's saying is it's going to manage your security for you, so you don't have to rely on weak passwords, I think, something like that.
Well, if you're like me, you use the same password for like 90% of your things.
Yep.
Probably shouldn't say that in public, but but I mean, we all do, right? You have that little risk threshold.
Yep.
You know, I don't really care if somebody gets access to this. I have a generic password I use. And then, you know, bank accounts or something, you have, you know, really strong passwords. That's a waste. Why not use my finger? Why not use, you know, something that's just inherent about me rather than trying to remember a 7-digit phrase?
When you look at Windows 10, what technologies do you think are going to win and which ones are going to lose? So which ones should testers really start to get more familiar with and which ones should they start, you know, not have to focus so much on?
You know, it's actually kind of a continuing story here. Microsoft isn't deviating too much from where everybody was going anyways. They just put a little bit of their own spin on it. So, look, nobody coming out of school should be learning VB scripting anyways, right? Yes, it's powerful, sure, but no, go learn something new. You know, .NET is going through a lot of changes. You know, there's going to be more coming out about this coming up in Build 2015, which is Microsoft's big launch for a lot of their developer-focused things. You know, I think this is going to reinvigorate .NET. Not that it was really dying, but I think it's really moving it forward into the future. So you're going to see a lot more focus, I believe, on the modern scripting languages, modern .NET, so this new .NET core. You're not going to see WinForms. You're not going to see WPF. And then the other biggest one, APIs. APIs are 100% part of everything going forward. There is not going to be such a thing as a program that does not interact with APIs, whether they're web services or operating system APIs or device level APIs.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely agree with the APIs. And I think, you know, companies like SmartBear, and I've been blogging about this for a while, that it's coming. And when it comes, I think it's going to be a game changer. And for testers, I think this is a good thing. My experience testing at an API level tends to be more reliable and a lot faster than a UI test. So I'm kind of excited about that change.
It's kind of really funny because, to me, the Windows 10 story really boils down to two things. APIs are just where it's at. That's the foundation. That's your base. But The other end of that, the actual user experience, is going to get focused on more too. So I think you'll see less focus on that kind of in between, you know, my buttons on this part of my screen, and a lot more on the basics, APIs, and your real experience. Geez, how fast is my screen refreshing? Does it move with me seamlessly when I pick it up from my couch to go to my kitchen table?
Right.
Does my HoloLens accurately portray the thing on a tabletop, right? So it's kind of funny, but it's actually kind of going towards both ends, right? You know, API level and that ultimate user interaction level, which we started going to with phones, you know, with gestures and things like that. But now, I mean, we're not that far off from just waving your hands in the air.
Right. It's definitely like Minority Report. So it's kind of really cutting there. It's funny.
You know, the tablets really aren't that different.
Yep.
My wife, she has a Surface. She uses it on the coffee table and types away and does her blog posts or whatever she does. She picks it up. She wants it to go with her over to the kitchen to, you know, pull up a recipe. And she interacts with it completely differently. But it might be the same application. It's certainly the same hardware. So it's going to be very, very important, I think, to test that end of things as well. That user experience that, frankly, I don't think if testers, we really focus enough on that, kind of beyond pure UI.
I definitely agree. It's going to be more user-centric almost. As a user, I want to do this and see how make sure our applications are able to handle those different scenarios.
And I mean, the last piece there is Windows 10 is going to make it very easy to deploy across all the devices, which means, really, if I'm making an application, the users are going to expect it on their Windows phone and their Windows tablet, as well as their desktop. I can't just make it for one thing anymore. Sure, Microsoft's made it easy, but the user expectation is going to be this is available everywhere. So I think this is going to have a lot of big challenges for testers, even more than the development crowd. Way to get your listeners, right?
Yeah, I know. So besides that, you also talked about .NET Core, and I think in your webinar, you brought up an issue that this might cause. Was it, there's different binaries that are going to be on these different applications, and how do we test that?
It's got the greatest name of a set of problems I've seen in a while. DLL hell.
Yes.
What a descriptive name.
Yep, yep.
So one of the things they changed, well, you know what, let me back up for a second. They forked .NET. You've got .NET Core and you've got .NET Foundation. And the thing everybody really uses right now is .NET Foundation. However, they've said .NET Core is the future of .NET. That's what they're going to build the new features in. Nobody really knows timelines about every detail here, but .NET Core is the new application framework. Speaking of application frameworks, the way it deploys, called NuGet, is, which sounds horrible, but NuGet. I keep wanting to say NuGet, but NuGet is, it deploys its own DLL framework. So you can't depend on that big .NET installation that's always there and stable. You actually include everything you need with the application, the same way you do now with like an Android app, right? The problem is that introduces a whole nother layer of incompatibilities because my application could deviate from things that are actually already installed. And if I'm not careful about what I include, oh, geez, you know, now suddenly I've got all sorts of bizarre problems that are going to crop up in a lot of different ways. It's kind of actually introducing some of the problems that, say, the Android folks have had to the Windows world, which previously we could just sort of depend on .NET always being there and knowing exactly what's there. You know, .NET 4 was .NET 4, and that was that.
Would you recommend that we start looking at maybe the Android user forums and see what type of issues they're dealing with and how they work around it as a kind of a preview of what we're going to probably get into?
Absolutely. You know, I suppose some of the more business folks in the industry would say that, Microsoft's really taken a few pages out of Google's book here. You know, that deploy across all sorts of different devices, an API-based store, application-level device includes. So instead of that big .NET centralization. So a lot of the lessons, I think, that Windows developers and testers are going to have to learn have already been experienced by the Android community, more so than any other community out there. So maybe we'll see some Android folks even moving over to the Windows side of things.
Is there anything else you think testers need to be aware about with Windows 10?
So the one other big one is actually user adoption, because I think this Windows release is going to be fundamentally different than every other Microsoft release of an operating system ever, because they're giving it away for free to everybody with Windows 7 and Windows 8 and Windows Phone, which means for security reasons and all sorts of other just basic people hit update whenever they see it, everybody who's on Windows 7, 8, Windows Phone are going to be on Windows 10. Microsoft's making it free to force developers to address it. There won't be that little hesitation of what we got from Windows XP to Windows 7, or right?
Yep.
Can you imagine if they had made Windows 7 free? Everybody just would have gone to it. So that's what's going to happen with Windows 10. You know, the time frame on this is pretty clear. It's the end of the year. People are going to be updating Windows 10, which means things have to work and developers have to develop for it. There's no luxury of choice or much of a time lag here. I think by, you know, February, you're going to see pretty much most of the general users on Windows 10.
Wow. And you just reminded me of another feature I think might be kind of a problem for testers, especially if they're really into QA where they have a locked down environment and they know what versions they're testing against. When they move to Windows 10, I think there's an always up-to-date feature that they're going to just push out, you know, new security patches automatically. So is that something you've heard about, or something you think testers are going to have to deal with?
You know, I'll throw some more Microsoft marketing speak. They're calling it, you know, Windows as a service, right? Windows has always been a service. It updates all the time. That's not new. The thing that's new is, and I'm sure they won't say this, you know, too loudly, the default is going to be this thing updates all the time. Not just security features, but everything. It's going to be a continually evolving operating system that's going to last a long time. It's going to automatically update on users. That's the new default. If you think about all the other things you use, your phone, etc., things just update. All those applications on your phone, you're not installing updates. They're just automatically doing it. That's the future for Windows, which means, unfortunately, that you won't have that nice, clean, locked-down environment. But honestly, that environment was a myth anyways. You know, it really was. And again, this isn't something that's new. Android's been dealing with this forever. Things just change. So handling that change gracefully and quickly is going to be far more important than it even is already. So you're going to see a lot more focus on things like continuous integration, et cetera, what I would just call continuous testing.
Yep.
At no point should you ever stop testing your application anymore. There should be a system somewhere that is configured exactly like your users generally configure Windows 10, constantly updating, and you just constantly have your regression suite running on that. You know, have your smoke tests executing so that if the newest update triggers, you know about it immediately.
That's another great point. And I think that a lot of teams have been trying to move towards a CI environment. And I think Windows 10 is almost, you're almost going to have a CI system set up. It's a best practice. And Windows 10, I think it's actually going to make it critical where you'll have to have it.
Absolutely. And you might even need to have it across a couple devices. You know, it sounds silly, but there are differences between a phone and a desktop, even if they have the same operating system. So they, you know, you're going to need to have it across a few devices probably. You know, to go back to one of your recent podcasts, you were talking about skills testers should have for the future. You know, and all those skills you mentioned, APIs being very important. But one of them, I think, is going to be that really big focus on continual testing.
Right.
People who understand that, people who can set it up, people who can pick which tests actually need to be run in an intelligent manner. You know, those people are going to be absolutely invaluable to everybody from the small application vendors making, you know, quick little games for your phone, all the way through, you know, Intuit churning out QuickBooks.
I completely agree with you. And it is a challenge because, once again, if anyone has, you know, done automation for a while, it's hard to get your test suite running, I think, 100% clean. And when you start adding CI and different configurations, it's just, there's a lot of overhead. So like you said, I think it's actually a special skill to identify the core tests that need to run against each environment and not just do the whole test suite. just from a maintenance point of view.
And I think what we're going to see is actually a real modernization of testing, because right now it's still not, you know, people were talking about standards, but, you know, I think nobody really likes the new ISO standards. What we're going to see, though, is standards around certain skills. So you're going to see people who specialize in continuous testing. Yep. It's people who specialize in cross-device testing. And those skills will slowly become a little bit more standardized, hopefully not to the level of, you know, ISO standards or anything. But certainly we're going to see a little bit more diversification and specialization, I think, inside testing as it moves away from good old QA to being a true skilled developer level profession.
Mm. I agree. That's some great insight. I definitely think that's the direction. And that's kind of exciting to me because I think it's the right thing that we should be doing anyway, but it almost forces us to do the right thing.
And that's, to me, one of the big things with Windows 10. It's Microsoft saying, you know, here's the future. And, you know, we hit upon it a few times here as we talked. There's going to be some big testing challenges. You know, there's new things to consider. There's going to be a lot to test. But boy, does that make the role of a tester absolutely essential to every development organization. And not just a tester, but a skilled tester. So there's a lot of challenges and problems coming up, but there's a heck of a lot of opportunity.
Awesome. Well, it's good to be a tester, I think, now. I think sometimes people look down on testers, but I think the more we get into it, the more essential tester skills are going to be.
Especially as they keep making all those development languages, you know, a little bit higher level and all those IDEs a little bit more plug and play. Hey, maybe we're not too far away from the day when testers are more skilled than developers,
right?
and we get to look down on devs.
That would be an awesome day, definitely. So Jeff, before we go, is there one piece of actual advice you can give someone that's planning on moving to Windows 10 when it comes out?
You know, it's funny. Every time I think I've talked to you, you've asked for a little bit of advice. I've always come back with download something. And unfortunately, I got to go there again. Go download Windows 10. It's not that hard to get set up. For a beta, it's pretty easy. And go set up Windows 10. Start getting familiar with it. If you've got an existing application you're responsible for, try it. I was a little surprised how many things just worked pretty seamlessly, actually. And most of all, pay attention, because I don't think we're going to have a ton of time between when this goes to manufacturers, the rumors in June, and when it comes out for back to school. So I think it's very, very important to keep on top of this prior to release, because so many people are going to be moving the second it's available, that we need to be ahead of it, not in tune with it, not parallel, but a little bit ahead. So go download Windows 10, start thinking about how you're going to handle things. And if you're a tester, start talking to your developers and see what they're thinking. And if the answer is, we only support Windows XP or we only support Windows 7, maybe find a different place that has more modern developers.
Oh, it's a good point. I'm actually going to stop pinging my architects and say, hey, have we thought about Windows 10? What's the plan? What's the roadmap for this? To get some insight. So I think that's great advice. It sounds a little low tech, but sometimes just communicating with other people sometimes is the best piece of advice.
You know, I think, you know, if you were to pick one skill for a tester to have, that's the right one. Communication, right?
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, thank you so much again for your time. I really appreciate it.
You know, thank you, Joe. And it's always fun talking to you.
Awesome. Thank you, Jeffrey, for your Windows 10 automation awesomeness. For links of everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/41. And while you're there, make sure to click on the more info link under the exclusive sponsors section to learn more about Sauce Labs and their must-have services. And I just want to give a quick shout out to Dave Pakilov for his 5-star review in iTunes. These reviews go a long way in terms of exposure and helping new people to come along and see that this show is worthwhile. And honestly, it helps me stay motivated and make the show even better. So if you haven't already, head on over to iTunes and leave hopefully a 5-star review and let me know what you think of the show. That's it for this episode of Test Talks. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.